great place to be in, just to acknowledge the majesty and wonder of our God. Our God who has called us out of darkness of life that we find ourselves in a lot of times and invites us into living in his incredible light. Over the past several weeks, we've been talking about what it means to be living a kingdom life. And I want to continue. We're actually going to be wrapping up today in that series. Next week, we have a special Take It Home weekend that we're going to be doing, but which kind of launches out of one of our ideas from the Beatitudes. But this is basically the end of the series as we've been working through it. But I want to start off with a question. Because we did our commission for the men today, and over the last several weeks, we've been able to hear from each one of them. And a lot of times, we've been asking them, why are they going to Kenya? And as I recall, over the course of these weeks, motivations have ranged from, you know, just seeing pictures of the last team that went and just hearing the stories and just wanting to go experience something like that myself, or just, you know, seeing that there's this incredible need and just wanting to be able to do something about it. That's been a lot of what has been motivating factors. When we think about going on mission, I think that's what often drives us, right? It is a heart that's compelled to do something, to make a difference, to be able to change what is the way it is currently. We look at it and say, this isn't the way it should be. We should see something different there, and that drives us, it motivates us. Not often do we go on mission just because we were told we had to go. It's not a good reason for us to pack up and travel thousands of miles overseas. It's not a good enough reason to spend some of our own resources and spend months fundraising to try and bring in the rest of the resources to be able to go and do this kind of trip. It's not enough motivation for that. We're driven by something deep within. We're driven by a changed heart, a heart that desires to see something better for someone else. And today we're talking all about the heart. Because when you look at Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and the things that he said throughout Matthew 5 to 7, and the things that we've been looking at over the last several weeks, really we've been talking about a lot of values, about attitudes, about things that really are truly rooted in the heart. Things like contentment and generosity. These are all issues that come from the heart. And Jesus is really bringing us back to the whole thing through this whole message that he gives. That it really is all about your heart and what your heart is longing for, what your heart is given for. And so that's where we're going to spend our time today, is looking at this whole idea of Jesus' appeal that we really live out of a heart that's transformed by him and for his purpose. Now, I'm going to kind of give away quickly. I'm going to give away the message for you right away. And I'm doing this up front because, as I was telling a couple people this week, I'm trying to cram 3 hours worth of sermons into 30 minutes. So if I don't quite achieve that, I apologize in advance. But we are looking at some of the heaviest and most condensed teaching that Jesus gives throughout his earthly ministry on a whole number of topics. And we're going to try and cover all of that this morning. Okay? It's a little ambitious perhaps, but we're going to give it a shot. So here's basically what I hope you'll take home from today. Jesus is calling us not to live to avoid doing what the law forbids, but to live with a heart given for the things that he loves. Okay? To live a life that's not about avoiding the line where the law says don't do this, but instead to live a life that's pointed towards what he calls us to do. Are you with me? That's what I want you to take home today, I hope. That's what I want you to take home. We'll see what God wants for you to take home. But we're going to approach this in the same way we have over this whole series. We're going to be looking at a group of people that Jesus called blessed, who we would maybe not call blessed. We're going to be looking at a lesson from the blessed and also a spiritual practice we can use to grow in the value of what we're talking about today. So that's how we're going to kind of approach the message today. And we are going to dive a little bit deep, but we're also going to do this. We're diving deep from a bird's eye view. Does that make sense? We're going to really skim over the surface of a lot of stuff that Jesus talks about to see the whole point of what he's trying to say. So that's how we're going to approach today, so just to give you a heads up on that. Let's just take a moment and pray and invite God to speak to us this morning through his word. Father, you know the struggle I've had this week as we've come to this text. Lord, it says so much on so many different real life topics, the stuff that we deal with day in and day out. And Lord, as I've been in the word, it seems like this is all about our heart. And so we just pray this morning, Lord, that you would change our hearts. to not just live to avoid doing what you've told us not to do, but to live to honor you and to love in the way you've called us to. But God, beyond what I want to accomplish with this message, I just pray that you would give us eyes to see what you have for each one of us from your word today. You would give us ears to hear the whispering of your Spirit as you speak to the deep places of our lives. You would give us minds to understand how this connects with our life, and you would give us hearts to respond, Lord, that we would truly desire to follow you in all things. And above all, Lord, we pray that it's your words heard here this morning and not mine. For we ask for that in Jesus' good name. Amen. All right. Well, as we've been doing through this whole series, and I got to tell you, I don't know how you've enjoyed it, but I've loved being able to read the opening verses of Matthew again and again and again, just to see over and over all these different groups of people who maybe we would look down upon, and Jesus calls them blessed because in him they're welcomed into the kingdom. And we're going to read one more group this morning. And we're going to read through all the verses that we've done previously to that, as well as that one. So Matthew chapter 5, we're going to read verses 1 to 8 this morning. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, again, just these crowds made up of all these people, these rejected people of society, these people who were broken, hurting, struggling, people who were maybe really powerful and strong as well. But when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Now, throughout the series, and I'm just going to mention this again today because I want to give credit where credit's due. My thinking on the Sermon on the Mount several years ago changed a bit and went a lot deeper in my understanding of what Jesus was saying through a book called The Divine Conspiracy that was written by Dallas Willard a number of years ago. And so the perspective on the Beatitudes particularly was one that I've gleaned from him. And I just want to say that because I really value a lot of what he said in that. And so if you ever want to read the book, it's a phenomenal book, all written about the Sermon on the Mount. But just as we come to this person of the pure in heart, I say that because, you know, a lot of times we say, well, the pure in heart, that's a really good thing, isn't it? It can be. It can be. I say that because it can also lead us into a lot of trouble. And that's, I just actually want to read Willard's quote about the pure in heart, because I think he captures well where this can go. So this is what he says about the pure in heart. "And then there are the pure in heart, the ones for whom nothing is good enough, not even themselves. These are perfectionists. They're a pain to everyone, themselves most of all. In religion, they will certainly find errors in your doctrine, your practice, and probably your heart and attitude. They may even be harder on themselves. They endlessly pick over their own motivations. They wanted Jesus to wash his hands even though they were not dirty and called him a glutton and a wine bibber. Their food is never cooked right. Their clothes and hair are always unsatisfactory. They can tell you what is wrong with everything. How miserable they are. And yet the kingdom is even open to them. And there at last they will find something that satisfies their pure heart. They will see God. And when they do, they will find what they have been looking for, someone who is truly good enough." The pure in heart, the one who has to have everything perfect, regardless. The one who strives always to make sure everything in the appearance, everything that they're doing is right. But when they see God, they will find something so much better than all the rules, all the expectations, all that stuff that they've placed on themselves and on others for their whole life. They will find God in his love for them. The kingdom is open even to those who continually strive for something they can never achieve. The kingdom is open to them as well through Jesus. Now, again, as we've said over these many weeks, the lesson from the blessed is, a lot of it is that the kingdom is open to anyone. Anyone is welcome into the kingdom. It doesn't matter if you nail your doctrine perfectly. It doesn't matter if you are this really smart, powerful person. It doesn't matter if you are a drunkard on the street. It is available to you in Jesus. He has made it available to everyone. And that's the first thing to get again today, is God welcomes us into the kingdom. But the piece of this that I want to point out, the lesson that comes from the pure in heart, points us to the value of actually encountering the person of God. See, there's something in meeting God and seeing God face to face and meeting Jesus that pushes us beyond all the rules that we think we have to follow in order to attain something, you know, something spiritual or something wonderful or to attain God's favor. You know, a lot of us who have grown up in church have grown up under the weight of many of these rules. And I'm not saying every rule is bad, but I'm saying that a lot of us have grown up under a system of rules that really is oppressive, in a way that really is constantly pointing out everything you're doing wrong, right? Well, I can't believe that you went to see that movie last night. Yeah? All these different things. There's all sorts of different rules we've placed on ourselves in order to follow the law of God. But in encountering God, encountering Jesus, we get something so much better than just a strict adherence to the rules. Something will actually lead us to living the fullness of a kingdom life. Now, you may want to argue with me on that, and that's fine. We can do that later. But what I want to do today is we're going to look through what Jesus says in a lot of the rest of chapter 5, the first part of the Sermon on the Mount. Because in that, I think as we look at the kind of this bird's eye view of what he's saying, we see that Jesus is all about getting beyond just the law and finding a life that's rooted in him and following him. Okay? So that's what we're going to look at today as we get into this. So we're going to start off with Matthew 5, 14 to 20. To look at this lesson from the pure in heart, that it's about encountering God, not just following the rules that we make for ourselves, or the rules we make for ourselves in order to try and follow God's rules, because those are sometimes just as bad. Okay, so here we go. Matthew chapter 5, we're going to read verses 14 to 20 to begin, and then we'll dive into some of the rest of Jesus' teaching as well. So he says this, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." I've read those words many times and been terrified by them. We're going to get to what it means to surpass the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees in a moment. But first, couple of notes about the text. I started back in verse 14. Because, you know, thinking about you are the light of the world, when we talk about what a kingdom life is about, it's a life that should shine. You know, when we talk about the values that we've talked about over the last several weeks, when we talk about values like humility and authenticity and contentment and generosity, those are things that should shine in the world. Those are not things that are necessarily common in our world. So that should shine out as a light in our world as we're living the kind of life that Jesus has called us to. That's a life that shines. You don't hide that under a bowl. You don't bottle that up. You let it shine out in the world around us. That's what a kingdom life should do. A couple other things we've got to note about the text, though. This is the part where it starts getting uncomfortable. Jesus is not about taking away the law. You may think, well, Dave, that's kind of contrary to what you said already today. We'll get there. Jesus is not saying that the law is unimportant. He's not saying that he's taking it away or destroying it in any way, shape, or form. That's not what he's about. In fact, not only is the law still going to be around, but you need a righteousness that surpasses those who say they're following the law already, those scribes and Pharisees. You need a righteousness that goes beyond theirs if you want to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Okay, this is getting scary a little bit now. But let's deal with some assumptions we have about the law. See, a lot of us think of law as something that's fairly oppressive. And yet, when you look at what the Bible says about the law, and the writers of like the Psalms say about the law, it's something they actually took a lot of delight in. It was something that renewed the soul. It was something that gave them life. It wasn't something that they found oppressive. It was something that they actually treasured as putting them above the other nations around them that had no law. Being able to see that this is the way that God desires for us to live. And I think that's one of the big points about the law. The law defines what a kingdom life will look like. In a kingdom life, we don't see a lot of the stuff that the law says we're not supposed to do because we're following God. So the law is good. But the thing we have to understand about the law of God is that it's not our source of righteousness. But it is always the course of righteousness. When we live rightly, this is what our life will look like, but it is not the way to attain righteousness by making sure we don't do what the law prohibits. That's where the danger comes in. When we just try and live according to the law, if we just say, well, the law says, don't do this, so therefore, as long as I don't do this, I'm good. Right? Now I'm a righteous person. Now we get into trouble. See, this is actually what the Pharisees and the scribes were doing. They had the law. They had God's law that they knew inside and out. A lot of them would have had the Old Testament memorized. So I don't know if you're feeling bad about just knowing John 3:16, but they had like the whole Old Testament memorized, 39 books memorized. They would know the Torah inside and out, backwards and forwards, up and down, right? They knew it. Not only that, but they knew all the laws that they had put on top of the law to make sure they obeyed the law, right? All the different things you could or couldn't do on the Sabbath day that they had added onto it. They knew all these things. And yet Jesus came to them and said, listen, here's what you're like. You're like a cup. And it's a dirty cup, and you've taken the time to wash the outside of the cup so it's nice and sparkly clean. But the inside of the cup is still filthy. You've made sure you obeyed the letter of the law in all these different things to make sure you didn't cross the line, but you haven't actually dealt with the source of the evil in your life, which is your heart. All right. So then, let's talk about how we actually live then a righteousness beyond that of the scribes and Pharisees, because they were very good about living to the line of the law, right? Try not to cross it. But how do we get past that? How do we even get beyond that kind of righteousness? How do we do that? Well, Jesus knew that we can't keep the law by trying to keep the law. Let me ask you just a question. How many of you, when you're driving, think of the hundreds of driving laws that you have to be following as you're driving your car? How many of you even think about the speed limit? Yeah, okay, there's a couple at least. How many of you think of how far over the speed limit you are? Yeah. Come on now, Craig, I saw your hand. Okay. We don't learn to live by the law by trying to live by the law. It's a really hard way to actually focus on what we're actually trying to do. We focus on where we're trying to go, and we know the things, and it comes naturally to us as we go. Let's say, okay, our guys are going to Kenya, leaving this week. If you guys would have booked your tickets by saying, okay, here's the deal. I don't want to go to Malaysia or Japan. Are you going to end up in Kenya? Really? You're going to book your ticket by where you want to go, not by where you don't want to go. Right? That's how you're actually going to make sure you arrive at your destination. If we're just focused on where we don't want to go, it's a lot harder to get where we do. So living out a kingdom life, which actually will end up fulfilling the law, is not just about choosing to make sure we avoid all the stuff that we know we're not supposed to do, but rather to choosing to go the way that Jesus has actually walked and called us to follow him in. In John 6, this is what Jesus said, because he was asked what we must do to do the works of God. Okay? So you'd think, well, that's about the law, right? This is what Jesus answered. The work of God is to do this, to believe in the one he has sent. That's the work of God. To believe in Jesus, to follow Jesus. That is what it means to do the work of God. So the key to living a righteousness that's beyond the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees is really about what our focus is. It's not about ignoring the law, because the law is good. We're not saying don't do anything about the law. Like, don't do the law, because the law is actually right and true. It's from God's heart. It reflects God's desires and his passions. We shouldn't dismiss the law. We can't. Jesus said, I haven't come to abolish the law. The law is good. So we're not ignoring that. But instead, we're still focusing our life on following Jesus and living in his strength to live out a kingdom life. Are you with me so far? I may be losing you a little bit. Sorry about that. It is a matter of the heart. It's not a matter of everything outside. It's a matter of where our heart is going. Now, This is where we get into the bulk of this, okay? This is where it gets a little messy. Sorry to dump a really heavy one on you in the last one of the series, but this is just how it worked out. Jesus goes into a whole bunch of different examples to show what this is about, what it means to live out of the heart instead of just living by strict adherence to the law, okay? And so over the next several verses, he actually goes into this in Matthew chapter 5. And we're going to look at these really, really briefly first, and then we're going to go a little tiny bit deeper into three of them, okay? If we have time, we might just hit two. We'll see how it goes. Because really, each one of these could easily be a message in themselves. And so we're just going to skim over the top of them really briefly, what Jesus does with these, and then we'll go a little bit deeper on a few of them. So here's the examples Jesus gives. The first one he gives is the whole idea of being irritated with other people, right? And in the law, it says, don't murder. So Jesus says, you have heard it said, do not murder, right? Okay, well, that's what the law says. If we're really ticked off with someone, don't kill them. Well, that should be pretty easy to follow. But Jesus raises the bar a bit. He says, I tell you, don't even get angry with them. Don't have contempt for them. Don't harbor bitterness in your heart towards them. Now we're talking. And instead, choose reconciliation with that person. Choose restoration of that relationship. Choose love for them. Okay, that's example number one. Example number two. What do we do with sexual desire that we have? Well, the law says, don't commit adultery. Okay, so as long as I don't go have sex with a woman who's not my wife, I'm good. Not so much. Jesus says, don't even look lustfully at another woman. Don't look at her for the point of desiring her for yourself. But rather have a heart of love rather than a heart of lust. Driving deeper than just don't commit adultery to what's going on in the heart. Okay, what if you're unhappy with your spouse? Not that anyone would ever be unhappy with their spouse. Well, the law says, if you're going to do that, then make sure you divorce the right way. Give her a pink slip, guys, as she goes out the door. And don't let the door hit you on the way out. Jesus says, don't even get a divorce, but change the way you look at one another. Change your heart towards one another. Have a heart of love, of forbearance, of being willing to work things out with one another. Don't just give her a ticket saying, here you go. Okay, how about trust? How about trust in relationships? Well, the law says make sure that you fulfill any oath you make. So if you've sworn to things like, I swear on, you know, God's highest heaven that I'm going to do this. I swear on a stack of Bibles that I'm going to go do this. Then make sure you do it. That's what the law says. Jesus says, don't even make an oath in the first place. Just say yes and actually mean yes. If you say no, just mean no. Why do you have to say, oh, I swear on, you know, my mother's grave that I'll do this? Just have a heart and life of integrity so that if you say you're going to do something, you'll do it. Change what's inside in the heart. Don't just focus on what's outside according to the law. How about if you're personally injured by someone? What if someone steals from you or beats you up or something like that? Well, according to the law, whatever they've done to you, you get to do to them. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. If they stole your car, you steal their car. Perfect. It's great. So as long as, you know, I make sure I only steal their car and nothing more, I'm good, right? Well, you can see where this is going. Jesus says, in return for the harm you've received, don't harm back. Instead, forgive. And in fact, do more than that. Bless them. Take it further. Don't seek fairness. Don't look for fairness as we always look for fairness, but actually just seek to bless the person who's done you harm. How about our enemies? Well, the law says, hate your enemy. Okay, that's pretty easy. I just have to like the people that like me. Yes. Not so much. Jesus says, love your enemies. Pray for them. Pray for those who are persecuting you. In fact, not only did he say that, but he did it. When he hung on the cross and said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Love even those who hate you. Now, as we look at those six examples, there's two things I want us to notice about them. The first is this, that whenever he's talking about the law, when he says, you have heard it said, here's the law. In every instance, Jesus raises the bar on the law, right? It's not enough just to not murder. You shouldn't even hate someone, right? You should be praying for that person instead. He raises the bar on the law every time. And the second thing is that Jesus shows us a better way of living. Better than just avoiding evil, better than just avoiding what the law forbids us to do, but takes us into a place where we actually have a changed heart and live in a way that is good, a way that honors God. Now, I do want to say this. I've added a little bit in some of those illustrations because we see the flow of Jesus' sermon and how this plays out from the first to the last. And if you follow the flow of the arguments, I mean, it really makes a lot of sense when you see how the first build and the second build, you know, it kind of works all the way through. And so what we're going to do is focus just on three of these really briefly and look a little bit deeper at what they show us about a changing heart instead of just avoiding the evil that the law prohibits. Okay, this is not a full treatment in any way, shape, or form of any one of these. It is just a brief look at it to see what Jesus was trying to say as a whole. Okay, so the first one, dealing with irritation. Here's what it actually says in the text from Matthew chapter 5 about dealing with irritation. You've heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. All right. So let's have a look at this just for, and like I said, we're doing this pretty light skimming today, but we'll just get through it. This first example is important for a number of reasons, and we're not going to get into all the details of what it means when he says, raka, and you fool, and all that stuff. We're not going to get too deep into that today. Enough to say that Jesus said, don't be angry and don't live with contempt or bitterness towards people. It's sort of a summary idea of that. But this first example deals with a couple important things. It deals with a fundamental heart issue. It shows Jesus' focus on moving from what's just going on outside of us to what's actually happening on the inside. Moving from just obeying the letter of the law in order to see a heart that's transformed to live out God's love for one another. And you can see the movement as he goes through this text. Moving from murder, don't murder, right? To, you know, actually don't even be angry or be filled with contempt. We're raising the bar. We're driving deeper into the heart. But then moving completely away from just avoiding evil into doing what's good. Right? We move away from, don't just be angry. No. That's good, but that's not enough. Actually, be filled with love to that person. Do you see the movement? Get away from just the line of the law. Let's raise the bar on the law, but let's actually turn 180 degrees and go into a direction that's more positive than just avoiding evil. Let's choose good. That's the movement Jesus takes us on in this example. Taking us away from just avoiding the evil acts that we could commit to choosing an act that will actually bring blessing to someone. Now, he gives the example as he gets to the end of this text, the positive example, right? If you're there in front of the altar with your gift, leave your gift, go be reconciled, that whole example. Well, this is like being at a very holy ritual, right? Where you're coming to offer your gift at the altar of God at the temple. This is an incredibly holy ritual that you're coming to. Now, for us, that might be something like a wedding in a church, or it might be something like your baptism, or maybe for a pastor, like an ordination kind of service, where there's this kind of holy moment of God just kind of commissioning this whole thing to be going on. And it's like going to, you're in the middle of this ritual, okay? You're standing up there on your wedding day, and the pastor's saying, do you take so-and-so to be, and you go, hold on a second, I'll be back in an hour. Right? You're in this incredible moment when everyone's just kind of gathered around and is leaving that ritual to go and be reconciled to someone. Leaving something that's holy and very important, very significant. This is not just sort of a, you know, I was kind of just dropping by Timmy's and I remembered I had to go talk to someone, so I zipped off to go talk. No. This is leaving something very significant to go and be reconciled. That's the kind of heart that God's talking about. Someone who's willing to leave something very important and maybe even something very religious. To go and do what they're called to do. Now, the danger we can run into here is then we make a new law about this. So then we say, well, okay, so if I'm coming to church then, and there I remember I have someone, you know, someone has something against me, I have to go and do it before I come back to church. That's not the point. The point is you have a heart that's always looking for restoration in your relationships with people, regardless of where you are when it comes up. That's the point. Because it's so easy to make a new law out of this. And then say, well, as long as I come to church and I've dealt with that stuff, then I'm okay, right? Because that's what Jesus said to do. No, he didn't make another law. He said, change your heart. Don't just live according to the line, but change your heart. When you read what God says about all of the religion that they were doing, he says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. When you're coming to the altar, and you're just bringing a gift, but your heart hasn't been changed, what difference does it make? I desire a change in the heart, not just the external form of you obeying the law. It's not enough just to obey the law. First of all, you'll never be able to do it. But it's not enough anyways, because God desires that your heart be changed, so you're not just avoiding what's bad, but actually choosing what's right. All right. So the first example shows us that it's really a changed heart that counts to lead us to choosing right instead of just avoiding what's wrong. Okay, second example, dealing with sexual desire. Matthew 5:27-30. Here we go. You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for the whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Anyone, like, is this your favorite verse? Didn't think so. As you look at this text, in some ways this shows us the futility of trying to add extra rules in order to avoid sin. It shows us that the extra things that we put on top of the law that God's given to help us avoid the sin that he told us not to commit, it just shows us that it doesn't actually end up changing our heart. It doesn't actually deal with the root cause of this stuff. It doesn't actually help. Now, if we actually took Jesus' words seriously, how many guys would still have a hand and an eye? See, here's the problem with the law. The law leaves lots of gaps. Because it was never, I don't think, intended to account for every possible action or thought or attitude we could possibly have, but to show what a kingdom life looks like. And so when the law says, don't commit adultery, well, I can easily not commit adultery, but I can be looking at every woman I see in a lustful way, right? I can do it, I can hide it. Maybe I can't hide it well. Who knows? Depends on how well I can control my facial expressions, I suppose. But just because I haven't committed adultery doesn't mean I'm living a life of righteousness. So then we might want to say, well, hey, then I'm not even supposed to look at a woman lustfully, so how can I make sure that never happens? Well, here's how we can build on top of that law. I can make sure that if I ever do it, I'm going to gouge out my eye so I can't even see a woman. There's a plan. Will that change my heart? Will that change the longing inside of me? It might change opportunity, but it's not going to change what's actually going on inside. We can add all sorts of laws on top of laws on top of laws to try and accomplish the things to avoid the sin that Jesus told us not to do, but at the end of the day, it's not changing what's inside. It's just another religious observance trying to keep the law. And we do this with all kinds of laws that we add on to God's law in order to avoid evil. Trying to make sure we can keep the law. And some of it's not all bad ideas, but really it's not the source of our righteousness. And ultimately it doesn't transform our heart. That's what we need. We need a transformed heart. Because at the end of the day, here's a question to ask yourself. If you gouged out your eyes, you cut off your hands, would you still be thinking about what you could do if you were able? What would you do if you still had those eyes? That's still a part of your heart. It's still a part of your attitude. It's still a part of your life. Jesus desires that our heart be changed, not just that we keep the law to make sure we avoid evil. Because in trying to keep the law just to avoid evil, we're always going to mess up. One last one. Unhappiness with our spouse. Matthew 5, 31 and 32. It's been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, makes her the victim of adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. This is one I would love to spend a lot more time on, just to get the cultural stuff about what Jesus was talking about. But here's all I want to say about it today. And if you'd like to talk further about this, I would be happy to do that. Because I'm sorry that we're dealing with this in such a quick way today. In a lot of ways, what Jesus is dealing with here is flippancy in divorce. I mean, it was pretty easy for men in Jesus' day and in that culture to divorce their wife. There was two different schools of thought on what the law meant about this. And one of them was basically, it was so extreme as to say, you know what, if you don't like the way she cooked your dinner, you can give her a certificate of divorce and she's out the door. That's what we're talking about. And so if a woman is divorced from her husband, her life doesn't look very good from that point on in Jesus' culture. Basically, you've got a few options. Maybe someone who's wealthy within your family, extended family, will be willing to take you in. Probably as a servant, probably not as a full sister, but as a servant. Maybe you might get remarried, but you'll always be looked at as damaged goods. Or maybe you'll live life as a prostitute. That's pretty much your options in Jesus' day. So by giving a certificate of divorce, you're basically condemning that woman to that kind of life as a man. So Jesus is dealing with flippancy in divorce. It was so easy to do it. And it's like, listen, you guys are just trying to, you guys are making sure you obey the letter of the law by, if you do kick her out the door because you just feel like it, you're making sure you give her the right paperwork. Seriously? That's what you're doing? When you do that, you're condemning her to a life of adultery, in a sense. Let me ask you a question. This was sort of my thinking on this one. How different are Christian divorce rates from the world's? Correct answer is they're not. And I wonder if a part of the reason for it is because the main message that's come out of the church for many years is that divorce is sin. And so we may, you know, preach on it, we may yell about it, we may do all sorts of stuff saying, whatever else you do, don't get a divorce. Because that's the line of the law. Instead of saying, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Spend your time on that instead of worrying about not getting a divorce. Invest your life into your wife. Care for her, cherish her, love her with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Maybe if that's what we spent more time on, we'd see a difference. But we try and live according to the letter of the law, right on the line, and say, as long as you don't cross this line, you're okay. Really? Is that God's heart? That as long as you don't cross this line into this land of divorce, then you're okay? If I've been treating my wife like crap every day of her life? Really? Is that the heart of God? I don't think so. When we constantly try and just live to the letter of the law, we miss the heart of God for what life is supposed to be. It's not enough not to get a divorce. God desires that we would live a life of blessed, fulfilled marriage. That's what he's calling us to. It's not enough to live to the letter of the law. Jesus is calling us to have a heart that's been transformed by him. Because the kingdom of God isn't characterized just by people who avoid what the law forbids for us to do, but rather by those whose hearts have been transformed by God. That's what it means to live beyond the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. When you read about the fruit of the Spirit that Jesus talks about, or that Paul talks about, in Galatians chapter 5, he talks about the kind of things that the Spirit produces in us. And we've talked about this many times. He produces in us love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Those are the kinds of things the Spirit produces in us. That's what he creates in us. It's not just an avoidance of the stuff that Paul talks about immediately preceding that in that text. If you read Galatians 5, he talks about, you know, sexual immorality and all these different things. It's not just avoiding those things. It's about seeing the fruit of the Spirit being produced in us, where we have a life of increasing love, increasing joy, increasing gentleness, increasing faithfulness, increasing kindness towards other people. That's the kind of life that God desires for us to lead. And Paul makes a very interesting comment at the end of that when he says all these fruits of the Spirit. He says, against these things, there is no law. Living beyond the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Let me ask you a question. If you could sum up all of the law of God into two things, what would it be? Every bit. There's over 600 Old Testament laws. If you could summarize the whole package into a phrase that was encapsulated in two thoughts, what would they be? Love the Lord with your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commands. Jesus said it. If we actually live a life that is about loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourself, do you think we're going to go and kill our neighbor? Do you think we're going to steal from them? Do you think we're worried about claiming back what they've injured us with? Do you think we're really going to be concerned about that kind of stuff? Jesus called us to those two commands because he knew that everything else flows out of those things. If we live with a life that's pointed towards loving our God who created us, who redeemed us, who restored us, if we live to love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, if we live to love people around us as ourselves, the rest of the stuff is going to take care of itself. So if we desire to live with a transformed heart, what's the process? Well, it's not a 5-point plan to transformation. Let me just cover a couple things really quick, and then we'll finish off with that. Ultimately, it begins with an encounter with God, just like for the pure in heart. Choosing to surrender our own work, being the source of our righteousness, surrendering the whole idea that if as long as I keep the law, or as long as I do enough good things with my life, God will accept me. We need to get rid of that idea. Because that's trying to live according to the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And Jesus said it's not enough to enter the kingdom of heaven. You need something beyond that. And so we need to encounter God and accept Jesus' work on our behalf for our righteousness. Because at the cross, Jesus took the punishment for all of our sin, all of our wrongdoing upon himself. So that we don't have to work it off somehow. We don't have to do enough right things to make sure we're okay. We just need to accept what he did for us. And from there, once we've accepted his work on our behalf, just to choose to surrender to follow Jesus day by day. Follow his desire day by day. A choice that we make at one point continuing through life to see this transformation happen in us. To see Jesus restore our life to the kind of life it was originally intended to be. It's the kind of life that God created us to live. A life that actually reflects God's heart and his nature. A life that truly is about loving God with everything we have and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Now, a piece of that may be to overcome some of the brokenness that exists in your life, some of the stuff that's happened in your past. And that's what takes us to the third piece of today, which is the spiritual practice. And that's included in a handout in your, or included in an insert in your handout today. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'm just going to ask that you take it home with you and maybe spend some time with it this week. And really what this is about is taking time just to look deeply into your own heart and to allow the Spirit to look in your heart and show you what's there. And I'm not saying you have to do this exactly as written or whatever, but just taking some time to look deeply into your heart to say, God, are there things in my heart that have not been changed? That need to be changed? Are there things within my heart that are still pushing out evil in my life? What still needs to be transformed within me? And this is a part of maybe what could drive you in that direction or at least be a help along the way. And so I'm just going to leave it with you. I'm not going to spend any time on it today other than just to say, take some time and look through it as you can. And there's also some reflection questions on the back if you want to look at those as well. But may you just take some time for that spiritual practice to see where it is in your heart that God might be wanting to speak to you. Because at the end of the day, living a kingdom life is about our heart. A heart that's been transformed by Jesus to long for the things of Jesus in all things. And I really trust and hope that more and more it will be said of each one of us that that is our heart. Let me just pray, and then the team will come up and close us with a final song today. Heavenly Father, thank you that our righteousness is not dependent on us, but on the work you did on our behalf by sending your Son to take all of our punishment on himself. As we embrace that and accept that work on our behalf, as you transform our heart from that, as you transform our heart day by day, I pray that we would more and more live out a life that is about loving you and loving others. And in doing that, may we see a kingdom life that's characterized by all these things of the law, that we don't see those kind of activities in us, not because we're just trying to avoid them, but because we're longing to live for you. Lord, may we be a light in our world, a light where things are different within the Christian community just because we're living for you and for one another. We just pray, Lord, that in all this you would be glorified. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.